You thought Millard, Kiprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Leading the league in time on ice. This is Hockey Central at Noon on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Here we go. Welcome to Hockey Central at Noon. Jeff Merrick in for Damian Cox. Darren Millard.
He's beside you.
Yes.
Okay, you know what happened?
No.
I was about to say something about you, about our off mic conversation. Damian Cox and Todd Hluschko with us today. And then I remember a conversation with John Shannon where he said, you know, I just say it's you. I was like, no, this is Darren's show. I'm going to say that I'm always in for Darren. And then I wanted to take a shot at you.
Right.
Right off the bat. Set the precedent. Set a tone early, Damian.
I understand.
And instead, chewed my tongue.
Maybe you should stop being clever boy and just do your job.
Welcome to Hockey Central at Noon, your daily hockey show here on 590 Sportsnet and the NHL Network in the United States of America, where yesterday we saw the Washington Capitals win game one of their best of seven series from the Pittsburgh Penguins. We will talk about that with Craig Simpson from Hockey Night in Canada in moments. We will also talk about
Can
the Selke
Trophy. Can you spell petulant?
He's doing well. I'm just going to back off. Let him go.
We'll talk about the Selke nominees as well, but quickly around the table here. What'd you make
can
of
I,
last night's game?
Can I make
game?
One point
Oh, already you want to jump in. Yes, you want to make one point about Selke? Sure.
Yeah. Can we get rid of it?
In what sense?
Well, why do we have the Selke?
I was going to, you know what? I'm right on board with you. I don't understand that award. Well, I understand it, but I don't think it's significant.
And I also can tell you that a small minority of voters for that actually do the work.
I agree.
And deal with it and understand what needs to be done.
I would like to bank a little bit.
I'm not even sure, like the years I was voting for it, I just sort of went with the crowd.
Yeah.
And that's what I think happens. Like there's not a chance that people are actually sitting down and evaluating the top defensive forwards in the National Hockey. There is not a chance.
Can we park this conversation? Because this deserves more than couple of minutes we can do right now. Because I don't believe I'm going to say
but he
this.
He wants to talk about that.
Well, I'll 100% agree with what Damian is talking about here.
There you go.
I do too.
Like,
it's not going to be a big debate here. I think we're on the same page.
There's one other wrinkle I want to introduce into it. Considering this is a trophy named after a winger, how come it's only centermen that win it? We have to go back to Yuri Lehtinen to see the last time a winger actually won this trophy.
They don't take faceoffs.
Nonetheless.
It wasn't named after a winger. It was created
for a winger.
Right.
Bob Gainey.
Right.
We have to give him something. He does something that's so unique. Let's make a trophy for Bob Gainey.
Right.
And then it just turned into now all of
Who
a sudden.
Who was a great defensive forward.
Absolutely he was. Yeah. No denying that he may be the greatest of all time. But how
can you evaluate that? You don't want to talk about this now.
I don't want to talk about this now.
I don't want to talk. He doesn't want to talk about it.
All right.
I want to talk about the game last night. Do we have Craig? Is he on? Is he waiting for us? 12:05. Okay.
Well, why don't we ask Craig what he thinks?
Well, he was there. About the Selke?
Yeah, because he's probably ticked he never won one. He scored 50 goals, though.
He did.
You think he cared who won the Selke?
No. Let's talk about last night's game now. It was TJ Oshie with 3 goals. That's a hat trick that almost wasn't, were it not for video review. First of all, wide brush thoughts on yesterday's game. One of the things that I think jumped out at a lot of people was both Barry Trotz and Mike Sullivan said, let's let the big boys play against each other. So one thing I loved initially about yesterday's game, coaches will, okay, fourth line is out there. Let's get our first line out there. That kind of matchup. It seemed as if Trotz and Sullivan said, my big boys against your big boys. See who wins the game. What do you think?
No, I agree. I thought it was the thing that I liked. I just liked the pace of the game. I liked the speed. I don't know the physicality that was going on last night was really that surprised me at the very beginning. I don't think it's going to be sustainable for 7 games. I think that the physicality is going to settle down a little bit. But I really liked how the second and the third the depth lines of Pittsburgh were really stepping up because Crosby was getting so much attention put on him. And I think if Pittsburgh wants to win this series, those guys are going to continue to have to contribute offensively because I think Sidney Crosby is going to get shut down by the big boys. Maybe not for the entire series, but right now I think it is so important for that depth of Pittsburgh to find the back of the net. But I also think that first game was huge for Washington. That to win that in overtime, that was much bigger for them to win than it would have been for Pittsburgh. The momentum is huge.
I'm cautiously encouraged by what we're seeing in the last, by the best teams in the league right now. What were the shots last night? 45-36. which was similar to what we were seeing in the Chicago-St. Louis series. Teams seem to be, and, you know, I know you accuse me, what's the word you use? Whining about the lack of scoring in the National Hockey League?
Clutching the pearls. Oh, no, yeah. That's about fighting.
And,
have to come up with something about
and I think we're seeing the top teams in the league really trying to now create offense. Which is, if that's the what we're going to see, yep. If that's going to be the style of game, like, awesome. Sign me up.
Bring it on.
Like, this is fantastic
stuff.
Are
we finally now, you're right, and are we finally now getting to the point where, you know, the old saying, you know, you can't teach goal scoring, now we're saying, well, hold on a second here. Yes, you can. You know,
I knew you'd go down that. That was
you're the one that introduced it.
I know. It was a mistake.
You're the one that introduced it. But are they actually encouraging and teaching that more now? Like, how many were you ever taught touch? Todd?
I don't think you ever saw me play. I was more about changing the puck, dumping the puck
still.
And but not to the point where, you know, the skill set has been being taught at a really young age right now. But I don't know you either have it or you don't. That's what I think. I don't know if you can teach it.
Oh, please don't start this with him.
Well, I know. I'm just saying. He's so, Merrick, you believe
he's got a theory. He's got a theory.
I'd love to hear the theory.
Got a few theories.
No, you don't. You don't want to hear the theory.
We'll park it after the Selke conversation.
Okay.
We'll do that. We'll do Selke and we'll do my theories on goal scoring and shooting.
See what Craig says.
We're waiting for Craig. Right. Standing by. Is Craig there? We're waiting for Craig.
That's enough.
He is there. Hang on. Craig Simpson from Hockey Night in Canada. He was there yesterday for the overtime dramatics. Now, TJ Oshie with the hat trick.
You should know that Craig and I sat down in an establishment and hashed all these issues out last week.
Figured
it's all been
out.
Solved.
Okay. Perfect. Well, we'll wait for that treatise to be published. In the meantime, Craig, what did you make of game one yesterday?
You know what? I thought it was a good start to a series that, you know, has a pretty high billing in terms of expectations from fans and people around the league. I thought that, you know, Washington maybe early on home ice was a little bit jittery, maybe a little bit tentative, and I'm sure after game one have a little bit more respect for their opponent than maybe they thought they would have early in this game. I thought Pittsburgh showed that they are, you know, for real, the team that's been so hot down the stretch and gave on the road a pretty solid performance. So I thought overall it was a pretty good round one of what's probably going to be a 6 or 7 round, you know, heavyweight bout.
Craig, how important is it for, you know, the depth of Pittsburgh? We're just talking about the line like Bonino. Crosby got shut down a little bit last night. But for Pittsburgh to compete with the Capitals, how important is it going to be like the Hagelin, Bonino, Kessels, and even Malkin to contribute to this? Because it looks like there was a heavy, heavy presence being put on the Crosby line, rightfully so. But the depth of Pittsburgh has to continue to score in order to win this series, do they not?
Yeah, I think that's the reason why they've had success. I mean, so much focus is last half of the season by Sidney Crosby and how effective he was and how he clawed himself right back into the scoring race. But I think overall the strength of the Penguins in the last half or 40 games of the season anyway were the fact that they had contributions all around. I think in the first round against the New York Rangers, it's players like Rust and Sheary and Kunuckle and the guys who have come up from the American Hockey League that Mike Sullivan had coached early in the year, has some belief in. And I really think that that's going to be the, you know, deciding factor. And I felt coming in that was probably one of the concerns on the other side in the Washington Capitals with where they were in their first round. I mean, they really didn't get any of that secondary scoring. The Kuznetsov line wasn't doing anything. Williams hasn't been contributing offensively at all. So, you know, I think it's clear that as much as you love the marquee matchup of the top guys and Ovechkin versus Crosby, I think everybody in each room, and the coaches certainly know it, it's those depth guys that are going to get you through and probably win you one or two of the key games throughout this series.
So the Penguins get 45 shots. Every Penguin except Olli Mäta gets at least one shot, and they lose. If this turns into Matt Murray versus Braden Holtby, can Pittsburgh win?
Well, you know, the old shot clock, and I love bringing up stats with Merrick here because I saw through the Philadelphia series, the shots are so deceiving, and let's face it and call a spade a spade. If you've done enough games around the National Hockey League, you know that the guys who do have their finger on the button for shots on goal or have their finger on the button for a hit or a turnover or giveaway, it just varies so much from rink to rink. And to me, it's so inconsistent. I didn't feel like it was a heavily, heavily outshot Pittsburgh game over Washington. I think Washington does a good job of keeping a lot of your shots to the outside and not a lot of second and third chances. So I didn't think that Braden Holtby was really the difference maker. Just talking with our crew, I can't really think of three or four or five spectacular saves that were the difference maker for Holtby. So I don't think there's any question there's going to be a lot of focus on goaltending. The question will be, is Fleury going to be healthy enough? And if he is, what decision do you make there bringing him in? But, the irony here for Braden Holtby, that was his 21st win in the National Hockey League playoffs, and it's only the fourth time he's won without giving up one or less goals. So he hasn't had a team in front of him that has really been winning him games. It's been he. So, the fact that he's only been able to win four games when he gives up two goals or more is, really a testament to how good he's been at times. But I didn't really think last night was a game that you could say Braden Holtby stole them one.
Now, he's unlikely to make mistakes. Did you think that Murray made a mistake on the winning goal?
He made a mistake, not so much on the winning goal. The winning goal is one that, you could argue he bit a little too hard, wasn't able to get across. But given the fact of the shot that Ochi took before, you had to be, respectful of the fact that he might have tried to go short side again or try to cut across in front of the net. So I thought the mistake he made was on the Ochi goal prior to that, the one in the third period that went through his legs. If you're looking for a real, bad read or a late read by the goaltender, to me the third goal was the one that the second goal, I guess it was, the one between his legs in the third period that was the difference maker.
On the overtime game winner, too, and the call on the ice was it was a goal, and video review, outside of that one angle that you guys showed yesterday, pretty inconclusive. Yep. I'm still stunned that the call on the ice was goal.
Considering
the referee's angle.
I'm always cautious of that because we've had so many times where the one guy's pointing like he's motioning goal, but then the other three officials talk, and the call that goes to Toronto isn't necessarily what that initial one on the ice was. Right. We did get confirmation, though, that the call on the ice was a goal. So I agree. I think the only thing that, if you look at the decisive video that we did show, that is basically the view that official had, too. He was right on that side watching it. And so if you got to make a quick call like that, it is, a tough decision. And I think nowadays, the officials go, my instinct was that's a goal, so I'm going to call it a goal. And, you hope that with video review, that they're going to take a good look at it, and you hope that the video does the job of either confirming it or knocking it off.
And, Craig, the thing for me is I'm looking at the referee making that call. Isn't the safe bet just to put your hands up, blow the whistle, don't make a call? Because as soon as that went down...
That's tricky.
You heard Ochi...
But if you do that, then the call is no goal.
But at least you're going to get it right if the goal is in.
Not necessarily.
But it looked like it was inconclusive anyways last night. That's what I mean.
You're splitting hairs, though.
I know.
Your job on the ice as an official is eliminate. You can't do the game as an official thinking that the machines are going to save me. You do the game on the ice unless you are completely blocked out and have no idea. Then I think the officials have enough confidence in, either being overturned or in the system that if he truly didn't have a gut feel or didn't see it, I think, and I've seen many times, that the official does do exactly what you say. But I have no problem on that call with the positioning. Now, had he been on the other side of the net and he's emphatically pointing his hand, then I'd have an issue with it because you're more reacting to the players around you than you are the actual spot. But there's one good replay of the wraparound, and his vision was right on that corner. So I didn't have any issue with it at all.
So I know it's not a one-on-one game, but there's so much focus on Crosby and Ovechkin. Crosby plays 22 minutes, 51 seconds, is a -3, has one shot. Ovechkin plays more than 25 minutes, is a +3, and has four shots.
Head-to-head as well.
Head-to-head, but yeah, would you say Ovechkin outplayed Crosby? And I, like I say, I know it's not a one-on-one game.
Yeah. I didn't think either player was all that dynamic or impactful last night. I also, talking with Jim on the way home, was saying, you know, what's changed so much, and you think of early on, and maybe that's what a decade of hockey has done, not only for the players, but also just the rest of the league catching up. You know, I really felt that the speed of the game and the other players who have such top speed and ability to carry the puck. I mean, to me, when a player like Crosby got the puck and got his feet moving and was jumping through everybody as he was maybe earlier in his career, it really stood out. And what stood out for me was I didn't think Crosby played poorly, nor did I think Ovechkin played poorly. But the players around them are equally as fast and equally to push the pace. And I think that's one of the big differences of the game. How many times did we see Sidney Crosby in maybe his first 4 or 5 years stand out as that guy who gets the puck and just bursts through everybody? And I just think the game has really caught up with the speed of the other players, the ability to either take away that space and not allow it, but players able to compete at that high level of speed and making plays at that level. So I thought it was an okay game one for both players. I think they do play very different games now. I mean, Alex, even in the Philadelphia series, had other games where he was running around a heck of a lot more and was more of a physical force. I was surprised early on that, you know, he was a little bit more subdued in that area, and maybe partially that's indicative of the fact that he's got a tougher team to play against. I really felt early on the key change for Washington was, wow, we can't make a mistake against this team like we did against Philly. This team will make us pay.
Craig Simpson from Hockey Night in Canada joins us. The Capitals take a 1-0 series lead over the Pittsburgh Penguins last night at the Verizon Center. Tom Wilson, I can't believe it's 15 minutes into the show and we haven't mentioned Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson and the knee-to-knee with Connor Sheary. No call on the play. Opinion is ranging from, like Kelly Rudy last night on the panel, 2-minute minor, and that's it, to throw the book at him. Where are you at on the Wilson hit?
I'm not on throw the book at him, but I think much like the Braden Schenn situation. Right. I mean, when you've been doing all the games, to me the Schenn scenario was, gosh, our video packs just convicted him there, because all you had to do was look at time and time and time again. You got away with 6 other times where you were launching yourself up at a player and you got maybe 1 minor but no other call. So I think the body of evidence was there. It was pretty easy for the league to look at a trend. I would say the same with Wilson. I don't think you're going to see a 2 or 3 game suspension. I would say either a fine or maybe at the max 1 game. But I just think the body of work, I could get Ryan to get a pack together and yeah, he'd look and say there's a pattern with this guy that to me is a dangerous one. And I thought it was almost unconceivable how there wasn't a penalty called on that play. I saw where the officials were and what they were looking at. And, you know, at the time live, I was just shocked that neither guy put his arm up.
I mean, I think you're bang on, Craig. And the Department of Player Safety have been watching him and watching him and watching him all season long and trying to talk to him and trying. And it doesn't seem to be, he doesn't seem to be backing off. And you certainly get the sense that Washington wants him to be that guy. They want him to be that guy on the edge. And if he goes over the edge, they'll live with it then.
Yeah, I think there's a fine balance. And again, we were talking after the game that I've seen many times where Trotz has gone down the bench and had a little talk in his ear. And I'm sure it's, you know, the moments and reading the game where you don't need to do that little extra that you did. I understand there's a fine line and a balance, but he is one of those guys that no matter how much you talk to him or how much as a teammate you say, you know, just keep it within the rails. He's got that little instinct in him that can step over the line. And I think that was one of those instances last night. And I think at some point there has to be a bit of a message. I don't think it's one that will garner, a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if he even just got a fine to sort of send a message that you're on the clock now and anything else will be dealt with more severely.
Chris, Craig, personally, as a player, I liked it when a teammate of mine played that way. I hope he doesn't change his way. I think he's an effective player on the team. Obviously, he can't take penalties when you're doing that. I think the only thing is he changed a little bit of his direction when he took out the knee. So yeah, you saw that. That's a problem. But to that point and the physicality that Kyle Wilson plays. Last night, there was 73 body checks thrown on both sides. Is this a sustainable type of thing that we're going to see for the rest of the playoffs? Or is this just an incident where this was the first game of the series and everything's going to kind of, you know, calm down a little bit and we're just going to see more of the skill take over and not as physical a game?
No, I think you'll see it. If the indication of, you know, the Philly-Washington series that we did in round one, I thought was very similar. The games are very much of, you know, you move the puck, you're going to get hit. You're going in on a forecheck, you're going to finish a check. Again, going by the NHL stats, we were commenting going into the third, it didn't feel like an overly physical game to me. I guess because those Philadelphia-Washington ones were. I mean, they were running at each other right from the drop of the puck. So, you know, as much as they counted the hits the way they did, I didn't feel like it was an overly aggressive or guys going out of their way to hit. I think that's playoff hockey, and I think the mentality has to be, you know, wear your opponent down. If I'm going in, and much like you see, if you've got a defenseman that plays 30 minutes, to me, I soft dump it into Chris Letang's corner every single time, make him turn and go get it, and make him absorb a hit. And, you know, the two Stanley Cups that I was involved in and against the Boston Bruins, I can tell you, we never dumped it into any other side than Ray Bourque's. And you forced Ray Bourque to go back, and you forced him to turn under pressure. And even if it was a little bit late, you hit him at every single turn. And I think that's the mentality you have as a group and a team when you're dealing with playoff hockey.
Ray Shero, Flyers, did that with Bobby Orr against the Boston Bruins. Exactly right.
Or Fred.
What's that? Did I say Ray? I'm on a roll today. Fred Shero. Hey, one thing I want to end on here. We've all heard of a chick magnet. How about a stick magnet? Have you ever seen anything like Jay Beagle last night?
No, I don't. You know, fact that the one through the visor was just bizarre. And yeah, you've seen a couple, what was it, the linesman the other, some earlier this year, had one get up underneath his visor. But I've never seen a guy actually skating to the bench, you know, almost like waving the flagpole through his visor. It was really something. And, you know, I'm amazed, guys, so often that guys don't get hurt more. You think of how many times guys get hit around the eye and it protects them. And to have something like that happen and nobody get hurt was pretty amazing.
Quick, just some breaking news here, Craig. Get your initial thoughts on this one, and we'll bid you good afternoon. The Anaheim Ducks have made it official. Bruce Boudreau has been fired by that squad after losing in Game 7 against the Nashville Predators. I can't say that I don't think anyone is really surprised at this, but before we let you go, your thoughts on Bruce Boudreau, now ex of the Anaheim Ducks.
Well, credit to him to driving that steering that ship through the season that they had. I credit Bob Murray with not, you know, I didn't think there was a better option early on. The team itself was in a little disarray, and I thought Bruce did a good job of navigating his way through, but you know, through it all, I think everybody around the league has known there's not necessarily the best relationship between those two. And the fact that you got the team where it did and to lose another Game 7, I think it's probably a fresh start for both. And, you know, I wish Bruce, I think Bruce is a good coach, and I think he'll land back on his feet pretty easily.
Yep, there's a couple of vacancies already open. Craig, as always, thanks so much for stopping by. We'll look forward to the rest of your calls in this series.
All right, guys, take care.
Craig Simpson from Hockey Night in Canada.
Hey, I think it's going to be just like Washington when Boudreau was fired by Washington. He immediately was hired by Anaheim. I think you're going to see him hired very, very quickly.
Ottawa, Minnesota, those are two that are...
I mean, he jumped back
right away on the radar.
He jumped back in real quick. Does he take some time off now? Does he say reflect on it? Or he's right back in?
I think he's right back in.
Gabby wants a coach.
Yeah.
The only thing he's annoyed at, the worst thing for him, losing Game 7 means he doesn't get to coach the next day.
Yeah.
Yes. And he'd coach right throughout the summer if he could. And it's a shame because that was such a weird season. And this is one of those ones where, yeah, it's the sport. But basically, at the end of the day, can you boil it down to Bruce Boot? They lost that series, and he lost his job because Corey Perry didn't score any goals. Isn't that what
it comes down to? The high price help didn't deliver.
And so he gets fired.
And had they been able to sneak a goal in and go into overtime and win and then get into the next series, strong possibility they go right to the Stanley Cup.
So is he supposed to coach Corey Perry better? convince him or show him how to shoot?
I'm with you. I think coaches are fired far too frivolously.
They really are.
I honestly think that considering what Bruce Boudreau was able to do with this Ducks team, given
in
the
very difficult season.
Difficult season. Yeah. You know, last year he had his assistant, Brad Lauer, removed from the bench. Yanni and Paul McLean are right beside him. So the writing is on the wall, the bad start. Bob Murray stuck with him, changed his style of play. All of a sudden, the Anaheim Ducks are, you know, fighting Los Angeles for tops in the Pacific. I mean, I thought the job that Boudreau did under tremendously difficult circumstances was outstanding this year.
Yeah, it's funny, though. The job I always would have liked to seen him get a crack at was here in Toronto. Of course, that's not going to happen. No. That job's taken
long
for a while.
Babcock's contract.
I think it's more than 1 year.
You guys are no better than me. How was the relationship between Murray and Boudreau? Like, I mean, was there tension there throughout the whole year? Like, I don't know. You guys would know that better than I would.
I always felt that it was frosty.
I like them both. I like both guys. I'm not sure Bob Murray likes any coach. and I think that's the tension that exists on a number of teams.
Well, who will be the next
coach?
Look,
he supported him.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can condemn Bob Murray on this one and say he didn't give the guy a chance. He sure gave the guy a chance.
Yeah.
But at
the
end
of the
day, you have a team that finished first in their division, number one in penalty killing, number one in power play.
Yeah. And those are the coachable elements. Let's not forget that.
So why are you firing him?
They go 18-1 at one point to get back into the playoff mix, right? Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. Unbelievable job middle of the way. When everyone was casting them away, they're not going to make the playoffs. They go 18-1. And then maybe it was the energy level that it took to get to the playoffs. Maybe that ultimately did them in.
Here's the question that I'll ask you guys. If the issue with Anaheim wasn't coaching, was it composition? And if you agree it was composition,
what do you mean, composition?
The way the team was constructed.
Oh, all right.
Is it a problem of construction or coaching? And if you don't think it's coaching, is it construction? And if so, did the wrong person lose their job?
I think sometimes the players just got to be more accountable. I'm right with Damian, and I think that this falls on the players more than it does the coach. A lack of performance in the playoffs. I mean, not that Corey Perry wasn't trying. He was trying. It just didn't go in for him. And you know, maybe the series starts 2 weeks later and Perry finds his game and we're not even having this conversation. But I think far too often, and when I played and coaches got fired, I'm like, I can't believe that coach just got fired. I was playing like garbage or he was playing bad. Yeah. It's not on him. It's on the players. But the unfortunate thing is coaches are always the fall guys. As I always say, you can fire one guy, you can fire 18. Who's going to get fired?
I think Bob Murray's an excellent GM. I think Bruce Boudreau is an excellent coach. The challenge for Bruce Boudreau will get another job. The challenge for Bob Murray is, how are you going to find a better coach?
Well, look to Bruce Boudreau's left or right, I'm sure, is what they're thinking in Anaheim.
Or
McLean or Yanni. Take your pick.
And then there's Dallas Eakins down in San Diego.
Who's done a great job with the Gulls.
Going to be hoping for another opportunity at some point, so... You know, I mean, it's strange, though. I mean, if it's Paul McLean, the guy who got fired in Ottawa, and now Ottawa's got an opening, I think Minnesota makes a lot of sense. I think it's very interesting that Chuck Fletcher hasn't come out and said, yep, John Torchetti's the guy next year.
Yeah.
I think the thinking in many was, let's see
what's out there.
See who's out there, what's available before I make any decision. And for a team that really wanted to become more offensive last year, I think the thing for Boudreau is he's proven in Washington, he was seen as all offense. Well, this became an excellent defensive team this year. I think he's proven he can do it both ways.
So. Yeah.
Hey, I'm a fan. I admit it.
I don't disagree.
Want to put a wrap on it? Well, no, just the game sevens. That's what I have a tough time for Boudreau. He's an awesome coach. He's just had bad luck. In game seven, what is he, one in seven? Like that stat sucks. For him personally, he's like, I can't believe it's like that because that
doesn't respect the type of coach he is. This is about game seven. How many times is game seven about the coach, though?
It's not. You're right. And that's what I'm saying.
When is game seven ever about a coach?
It's bad luck. That's
so if you want to say, well, he could never win the game seven, find me a game seven where he said, wow, what a coaching performance, as opposed to, wow, Drew Doughty did this, or wow, Jonathan Toews did that.
I think the challenge in Anaheim is going to be. Now, with Boudreau gone, it moves squarely to Getzlaff and Perry. So it's been 9 years since they won the Stanley Cup. You know, that it's a while ago now.
Sure.
So it'll be a decade next year. Yeah. And they haven't won anything since. They haven't been back to the final. And Getzlaff and Perry, it's been their team for a long period of time. is now the time you say, you know what, we got to split these two guys up.
Here's another question you ask yourself, and this goes back to the composition issue and the Kevin Bieksa contract and the Ryan Kesler contract. This is a team that spent $64 million. Do we see them spending more, knowing it's a budget team? Do we see them spending more than $64 million?
I don't think so either. No.
So that means you're going to lose, tell me when to stop, Frederik Andersen, Sammy Vatanen. I'm just going through some RFAs. Sure. Sammy Vatanen is going to be gone. Rickard Rakell. Hampus Lindholm is going to probably ring the bell here.
And you know,
one of the more underrated defensemen in the NHL.
I should tell you, that was one thing that really, you know, was we wondered what happened to the Ducks this year. You know, they came out of the gate so late. The contractual situations for Frederik Andersen and Hampus Lindholm and all the stuff that went on with Rich Winner and being replaced by Claude Lemieux, it was nutty what went on with those guys, and it was unsettled all season long. And I know Bob Murray really felt that that was something that really did not help his hockey team.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But anyways.
You know what? Maybe the saving grace for signing Hampus Lindholm is what Morgan Rielly got. I think the moment Morgan Rielly signed that contract to the Maple Leafs, Bob Murray said, thank you for taking some of the heat off, or else he may have been one of those players ringing the bell. Yeah. But it'll be a fascinating time now in Anaheim. So if you missed the news, Bruce Boudreau is now ex of the Anaheim Ducks, free to pursue work other elsewhere in the NHL. We suspect it won't take long for Gabby to land somewhere. When we come back, we talking Selke?
I don't know. You keep putting off all these conversations.
Let's do the Selke trophy. She goes to the best centerman, always two-way centerman in the NHL. Wingers don't exist. What's this Hossa fella do anyway? We'll return here, Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network stateside.
A podcast that casts a wide net across the internet of sports. The Andrew Walker Show. Subscribe in iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central at noon. Around the table, Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard, Damian Cox, and Todd Hlischko. I feel like the teacher just came in, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
Darren is just off camera. Where'd he go? Where'd Millard go? There he is. Darren's just off camera here for the draft lottery tomorrow.
He's very comfortable, uncomfortable off camera. He prefers to be on camera.
Surprised he's not wearing.
He wanted to land the plane.
Come on.
Right? He wanted to land the plane.
How come he's got it?
You know what it is? He's the star of Draft Lottery Saturday, and so this is now beneath him. He's preparing himself.
I'm shocked he's not wearing his Brandon Wheat Kings tracksuit.
Oh, big game right tonight, right? Darren. Like, oh, I know. Up 3-1. You getting Chirp Colby tonight on Twitter? All right, Chirp. So it'll be good. That'll be fantastic.
Hey, watch out for Seattle, though.
They're legit.
Holy
good. Oh, I just got the wave. See you later.
Because the Wheaties always come through.
Oh, Wheaties do look good.
London's
in Darren's defense,
everything.
Wheaties look really good.
Knights are going to win anything, everything anyway. So
okay.
All right. OHL bias. Very good. There's a team in Quebec called the Huskies.
Not bad.
She win again. They look nice,
too. Team.
All right. Time for the things we learned this week in the NHL, brought to you by Boston Pizza. Order online for delivery. Boston Pizza. We will make you a fan. Damien, I know it's tough, considering that big brain of yours, to fit any more knowledge in it. But what did
when
you
I'm
learn
supposed
this
to come
week?
Up with something? Just anything?
Yeah. Well, it's a feature we do here regularly on the program. Thanks
is
for
it?
Tuning in.
I'm never on the show.
Well, I'm sure your producer, Matt Brown, has informed you of
things I learned in the
NHL. Learned in the NHL,
in the
this,
NHL
week.
This week.
Yes.
Well, I guess I've learned that that sometimes the... what was Game 7 of St. Louis and Chicago? That was on Monday?
Sure.
Was it
earlier this week? Earlier,
yes,
this week.
Earlier this week.
Sometimes the ugliest goals are the best goals. I mean, that Troy Brouwer goal.
Three whacks at it.
Swing and a miss,
sure.
Falling down
doesn't
off
matter.
The post.
Whatever.
And the neat part is, of course, that Troy Brouwer gets that goal, and then who's the hero last night in game one?
TJ Oshie.
See, now
you're one
of those trades that helps both teams.
See, here you go. You expanded, and it caught my what I learned this week is exactly what you said, but a little bit more. I learned that sometimes in the National Hockey League, not one team wins a trade. Two teams can win a trade. Oshie and Brouwer, they both contributed for both teams.
Yeah.
And I think you're always evaluating who won the trade, who didn't. I learned this week that sometimes trades work out for both clubs on the same level.
Okay, here's another wrinkle to that as well, where we're going to get on the TJ Oshie train here. You'll recall last year at the draft, Fort Lauderdale, the one team whose table stayed, and it was quite vocal at the table, were the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm-hmm. Like around the time, we were all up, you know, shooting our stand-ups and everything, and we're saying, well, how come Pittsburgh's still here? Turns out there was an animated discussion as the table was split on the Phil Kessel deal with the Pittsburgh Penguins. What should we do? Should we do this deal? What are the Maple Leafs asking for? It's too much. And what I've been able to sort of sleuth a little bit is there was a certain point in the very animated discussion where some people in Pittsburgh said, we're walking away. Let's offer the same thing to St. Louis for TJ Oshie. Mm. How do things change if they get the right winger from St. Louis and not the right winger from Toronto? It's the thing about the game, right?
Yeah.
It's all the off-ice stuff and how that affects the trades
you don't
make. It's a
very complicated question.
It's a very complicated. It's ifs and buts, right? And there's really no answer to it other than there was potentially something between Pittsburgh and St. Louis that would have seen TJ Oshie end up on the Penguins.
Well, you tell me.
Not the Caps.
You two guys, who would you rather have, TJ Oshie or Phil Kessel?
You played, Todd.
Yeah, I know.
I get out of this one. I'm just the host.
Well, I think that TJ Oshie is a more well-rounded player. Yeah. Depends on what you need. It appears that Phil Kessel's been a really nice fit in Pittsburgh. But personally, I would have preferred TJ Oshie myself.
Hmm. Can we do Selke?
Sure.
The Selke Trophy nominees have been revealed as voted on by the writers.
How come Damien didn't have to finish answering that question, though?
I just asked the question.
You didn't want. You didn't answer.
And then he recused himself.
So I'm the bad guy because I got Oshie and you guys get to.
Every
sit
once
back
in a while, when
anything.
He doesn't like the
but
question,
you know
Jeffy turns into the man of no opinion.
Okay. I was just curious. I'm just here to put the ball in the tee. Well, after all, you played the game.
I like
that's
both.
What I, keep
I like
from
both.
People.
Of
well,
Merrick,
what
back.
Do you know? You didn't play the game, so I'm going to recuse myself and say, well,
and your name wasn't on a Stanley Cup. Remember, someone told you that.
Doug did.
No,
John Shannon. John Shannon. Sorry, not Doug. My default is always to blame Doug.
Jan Shannon's name on the cup.
What's that?
Is his name on the cup?
On that fake one we have over there, I think he scratched his name on the bottom, the one that came from his basement. Anse Kopitar, Patrice Bergeron, Ryan Kessler. What do they all have in common?
Centers.
Right, and they're all nominated for the Selke because according to the Professional Hockey Writers Association, with all due respect, it's only centermen that are allowed to win and be nominated for the Selke Trophy. Last time would be 2003 with Yuri Lehtinen that we saw a winger. And how somehow in this entire process over the past 10 years, we've never heard the name Marian Hossa. Like, why is it that the Selke seems to be the domain of the centerman for the voters? Is it face-offs?
That's a simple one, right? Defensive zone face-offs. How good are you? You always hear the Selke guy. They're always talking about always functioning at 59, 60%. Wingers don't get in there. They don't get a chance.
But
to,
hang on. But
to
but isn't a board battle essentially a face-off for a winger?
It is.
A face-off just starts a sequence, right?
Yes.
And we put this enormous weight on starting a sequence as opposed to other parts of a sequence that leads to a scoring chance. Like, where's the stat for board battles that say, like, hey, this guy, you know, Marian Hossa has found Ryan Smith before him. We're great at board battles. That's a face-off for wingers.
Well, the other thing that never seems to come in, like, wouldn't the best penalty killer in the league qualify for this award if he was a forward?
Be part of
like
it,
you
yeah.
Wouldn't you think?
Yeah,
and
sure.
And you know, and now that you're down to these three guys, okay, tell me which one's better. Seriously?
Oh, I don't know.
Seriously, someone's going to tell you that Bergeron's a better defensive player or had a better defensive year than Kessler or Kopitar or Kopitar. I mean, come on.
And I think Damien makes a point that it's on reputation too. Bergeron, this is going to be his fifth nomination or sixth straight nomination, something like that. He is a great
Bergeron
defensive.
Bergeron's going to win it.
He is going to win it.
Going
exactly.
Away.
But it's like to Damien's point, it is a lot on reputation. There's a young guy that comes in that's doing a great job. Well, he's not going to get the recognition as a guy that's done it for 5 or 6 years in a row.
You know,
and guy's going to get nominated.
And the other thing, too, is I think the game has changed. There used to be one-way players. Mm-hmm. There really aren't anymore in the nature of the game. And Craig Simpson was talking about it, about you know, the players around Crosby, he can't jump into gaps. Like, everybody's fast. Everybody's checking. Everybody's on the right side of the puck.
Yeah.
You know, it was more glaring 20 years ago who the great defensive players were in the league and who were the guys who couldn't check their hat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's microscopic. And you know, and a lot of times I think it's, you know, who gets the opportunity to be out there in those kinds of situations. So I just... I also don't. I just I'm just, I don't care. I don't care who wins
too many
the
awards
Selkie.
Already.
I don't care who wins the Lady Bing, and I don't care who wins the Selkie. I just think those awards are anachronisms or they're from a time, and I just don't think that everybody goes, okay, so yeah. who wins the Lady Bing? Okay.
Well, I think you'd be on point with this one, Damien, in an era where...
With apologies to the Lady Bing's family.
Wait for the Governor General, former. In an era where we're clamoring for more goals, why is there a reward for the center that essentially throws a wet blanket on them? is the one that I think a lot of people can't get by. But even when you run down the list, because I agree with you, Damien, that this is very much everyone kind of says that Patrice Bergeron is the best, defensive player in the NHL.
It was Pavel Datsyuk for a long time.
Pavel Datsyuk before that.
And they were. They are great two-way players.
But if you go to, Joel Thornton had a monster defensive year as well, and Joel Thornton's not represented there. And Ryan Kessler, I could even make the argument,
right.
He's not the best Selke Trophy candidate on his team. Now, Sulfurberg and Cogliano aren't sexy names when it comes to the Selke, but if you drill down to some of the numbers and see what they're doing out there, all of a sudden...
No, and that's a great point.
Whoa, it's like, hold on a second here. Those two guys, you can make a case, are better candidates for the Selke than Kessler is.
Well, and it was like for a lot of years, I went out of my way to vote in my first place ballot for the Lady Bing to Nick Lidstrom. Who's a more gentlemanly player than Nicholas Lidstrom?
But
an offenseman ever win that trophy?
Well, it's funny because before Brian Campbell, I think Red Kelly was the last one in the 60s. That's
was that when he was playing center or was when he was playing defense?
No, that's when he was a defenseman with the Wings and he was made a center by the Maple Leafs to win four more Stanley Cups.
But
it had gone like that long between defense.
It's not cut and dry. It's almost like a figure skating judge, right? It's all opinionated, formulated on no, there's not a cut and dry. It's not a guy that scored 50 goals. You're right. There's tons of guys that could be nominated for this. And the thing that I think bothers you, Damien, is it's the same guy every single year that's getting nominated. And that's probably to your point. That's why you don't like it, because it's the same guys over and over again. Deservedly so or not. It's just, I agree with you. That I'm not. It's not a sexy award when you're a fan looking to see. You want to see who's winning the Rocket Richard, all that stuff. This isn't too exciting.
No, I think, look, we know a lot of these number crunchers, Rob Volman, your buddy Dimitri, all these guys, they could probably bore down deep into the center of the earth and come up with some kind of a number or an answer that would give you something. But other than that, it's a feel thing, and I'm not for me.
Okay, so you're not feeling that. Are you feeling St. Louis, Dallas at 8 o'clock on CBC tonight?
Yeah, I think that'll be a good series. I think St. Louis is going to whip them. I really do.
Is that because of goaltending and defense?
Just that. St.
Louis,
first of all, they proved a lot to me that they handled Chicago in game seven. That's number one. They've got all the elements. They're a very well-rounded team. And the way some of their players, and it wasn't just Tarasenko, but it was guys like Jaden Schwartz, really began to assert themselves offensively in that series and be dangerous players in
Yuri
that series.
Laterra.
Yeah, a number of guys. Robbie Fabry, becoming an I think they've just got, they're going to have too much for Dallas and that so-so blue line and that really so-so net mining to handle.
I agree that Dallas is, or St. Louis, it seems like they're a team that's destined to go a long ways. But I'll tell you what, this Dallas offense was number one in the National Hockey League all year for a reason. This is a potent offense. St. Louis is going to have to stay out of the box.
No Tyler Seguin first two games.
He's a major part of it, of course. But right now, that offense that they have right now, Jamie Benn, I'm never going to bet against this guy right now. This guy is the complete player. I talked to James Patrick the other day, and this team right now is so confident that they think that they're going to win. Obviously, every team thinks they can win it.
Sure.
But I think he feels like the attitude in that dressing room right now is, listen, this is as much ours as anyone else in the National Hockey League. And I like those guys.
Is part of that because the field has opened because there's no L.A. in 100%. Chicago?
Absolutely.
Right? You just got a couple of blocks. Ooh, I can see the end zone here. No Chicago, no Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Everyone should be thinking there's a window for them to win this year.
I think Jamie Benn's going to take a beating.
I think so.
In that series, they're going to go after him big time.
Well, he'll give it back.
I know.
Louis Dallas, 8 o'clock on CBC. That's game one. Game one as well. Late game, 10:30 Eastern. The Nashville Predators face off against the San Jose Sharks. Big weekend of hockey. And,
that's
draft
it?
Lottery.
It's over?
We have tomorrow as well.
Oh, man.
Come on, Winnipeg. Take our team. We take your kids. Love that hashtag, Damian. Join us next week. More Hockey Central at noon.